Hi there. We're back in the studio with Cultivating Hearts, and we have another new visitor today. It's Catherine. Say hi, Catherine.
Hi.
So Adriana's, excuse me.
She was at algebra, so she came late.
Yeah, we wanted her to go to class. Well, we're doing Matthew 26, 47 through 68, and it's all leading up to the preparation for the cross, and we went over the betrayer. And we've all had those in our lives, and sadly, we've all been one of those in our lives. Mm. And we're just talking about Judah. We talked about Judas, excuse me. And then we also talked about the different members that were standing around. And now we're going to ask, what did we learn about Jesus in this passage?
This is a good one. Okay, so we went through and we were examining what we learned about kind of like the betrayer, the people, the mob. And this time, after we listen to the narrative, we will examine Jesus's heart, what we can learn from him in this. And I want you guys to be thinking as I go through the passage, what you learn from Jesus as we go through. And so for those that didn't know the passage, we'll go over it again. So in Matthew 26, 47, this is starting here, is what the Bible tells us. So while Jesus was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived, and he was with a large mob with swords and clubs, and the chief priests, the elders, and he came as a betrayer, and he gave them the sign. He told them that, "I will kiss him, and the one I kiss is the one you want to arrest." And so he went right up to Jesus and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and he kissed him. Now, Jesus then responded and said, "Friend, why have you come?" And then they went up and they took hold of Jesus and they arrested him. And at that moment, one of those with Jesus reached out his hand, drew his sword, and struck the priest's slave and cut his ear off. Jesus said, "Put your sword away. The one who lives by the sword will perish by the sword. Do you not think that I could not call upon my Father and bring down 12 legions of angels? And how then could this happen so that scripture could be fulfilled this way?" So at this time, Jesus said to the crowds, "Why have you come with swords and clubs, made me as a criminal to capture me? Did I not sit with you in the temple every day, teaching from the scriptures? This happened so that scripture would be fulfilled." And at this point, all the disciples ran away. Well, they then took Jesus and they brought him before Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were convened. And Peter was following at a distance because he wanted to see what would happen. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for those that would bear a false testimony against Jesus, but they couldn't find any. Finally, two men came forward and said, "Once he said, 'I can demolish God's sanctuary and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Well, the high priest stood up and said, "Don't you have an answer for what they say against you?" And Jesus stayed silent. And then he said, "By the living God, I place you under oath. You tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." And Jesus said to him, "You have said it. But I tell you, in the future, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of the power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and he said, "He's blasphemed. Why are you still here? He's witnessing. Why do you still need witnesses? Look, you've heard his blasphemy. What's your decision?" And they said, "He deserves death." So then they began to spit on his face and beat him, and they slapped him. And they shouted at him, "Prophesy, tell us who hit you, Messiah. May God honor the telling of his word." Okay, so the question we are asking this time is, what can we learn about Jesus? I want us to think on how Jesus handles the circumstance. Now, I want you to remember, because I didn't bring this up at the beginning, Jesus had just woke the disciples up and said, "Get up, because my betrayer is near." Mm-hmm. And so think through how he interacts with each people group and the way they are treating him and how he responds. What do you learn?
I think it's ridiculous that he remains so calm. I mean, you know, when we picture this scene, whether in movies or in plays, it's always, there's a mob, but they're kind of off in the distance, and they're not really threatening. They're just far away while Jesus has this polite little conversation with his disciples and the main people. I don't think that's how it was, though. When there's a mob, it's like up in your face and angry and attacking. And, you know, it was such that the disciples felt threatened, and, you know, they're like, "Okay, it's time for a fight," and they cut off his ear. And Jesus is like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 everybody slow down." And you know, he draws that attention to, is this appropriate? Like, let's think about this. I've done nothing to merit this kind of attack from you. You could have attacked me during the day. Mm-hmm. And he just has that very calm and in control response to this insane mob.
Right.
Yeah, and also, you know, when Judas came, he called him friend.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, to me, that just shows his unconditional love. He knew he was going to be betrayed, and he still loves him.
I'm going to give you the word for that. Okay.
Okay.
The normal word would be friend, as in like a good friend, mm-hmm. but this is actually the word he uses, companion, almost like a workmate.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. It comes from H-E-T-A-I-R-E, hater. It's like an associate or a companion. And so I think that helps us some to see he's not necessarily saying like my beloved or my close friend.
But I think with that word, he's still saying.
Right. No, I agree. Yeah. I agree. And so that was a surprise to me because I have always been taught, because we focus in on the English language for friend.
Yes, we do.
But it does help us to see that Jesus does clarify he's a companion. He's not a close friend.
Well, he's a disciple.
Right. He was one of the people that traveled with him. But at this point, there is a delineation that's made. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that the kiss, which I didn't do when we did the betrayer. I want to go back and catch that. The normal word for kiss was phileen, L-E-I-N, which kind of is fun because you think of phileo. Mm-hmm. But that's a normal kiss, like to kiss somebody normal. But a kataphileen is a repeated kiss. It's a fervent kiss, or known as a lover's kiss, somebody that you're being very passionate towards. Judas gave him a kataphileen. His greeting was over affectionate, overly, you know, like oh, teacher, kind of thing. Like, so it's interesting how Judas's was very over the top, whereas Jesus was very, as Janelle said, it was very calm.
Isn't it usually the kiss was to honor somebody in those days?
It was a greeting.
So it was kind of hypocritical that he honored him with such a greeting.
Correct. Yeah. And commentators go back and forth. I think it was Barnes notes. Barnes was saying, because it was the kataphileen, that he was thinking, even though Judas is being used as an instrument, he's not fully aware of what is going on. Like, he doesn't realize the fullness of what he has just done until it occurs. Most of the other commentators go after him and say, no, he's, you know, he's flat-out betrayer, and he's just taken it to the nth degree. I think it was maybe Guzik. Guzik said that if it's the case that he really understood the full measure of, no, it was Spurgeon. It was Spurgeon that said, if it really is true that he understood the full measure of what he was doing, then we have no right to say anything nice about Judas. I was like, oh, Spurgeon, you crack me up. And so I thought that was kind of funny. But from this point forward, he cannot be found. As the betrayer, he's gone. Mm-hmm. Like, and when they're looking for the eyewitnesses, he is one of the people they're expecting to give testimony, and he cannot be located. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the reason why they're searching, because they don't have him there to give the testimony that they were anticipating him to give, and he's just disappeared. He does not reappear until his suicide. And so that I thought was interesting. So those were a couple of things we didn't catch when we were doing the betrayer. And so I thought that was, okay, let's look at that. All right, so let's go back to Jesus. What do we learn about him?
I think it's really interesting how throughout his entire focus is not on not on himself and what he's going through. Instead, it's on, okay, let me encourage you guys to basically to be God-honoring in your actions. Mm. You know, like, he's referring people back to the scriptures where he says, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. It's just very outward-focused, and, I mean, it fits perfectly with what Jesus is doing at this point, because he's going to the cross, and that's completely outward-focused. I mean, it just... it's really cool how you see that consistency.
Yeah. Always the teacher, always the encourager.
Yes.
Or it's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is beautiful. What else do you guys see?
There's just this sense of impending doom throughout this entire thing. There's just, it's such a shadow. And, like, I mean, you know, you would see the people surrounding you. You'd see in the darkness. And it's like you can see inside of Jesus' heart as he realizes that this is this is like the last moment of peace, and now it's all going to like fall apart from here. And
yeah, and you know, when he was silent, when they were accusing him, but then they asked him, I charge you under oath by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. And then he tells them about the future, or what's going to happen, that he's going to come back in the cloud, and pretty much the judge is coming back.
Yes, he tells us what is coming.
Right.
He lets them know that he's coming. This is good. We will look at that more. You know, for me, do we understand and capture the simplicity? And I'm saying this, do we, meaning me. He says to them very clearly, why do you come to me this way? You know, he says, I sat with you in the temple. Now, what we have to understand is, how did Jesus respond to them saying he needed to go? Did he fight them?
No.
Mm-mm. No. He's letting them know. If you'd have come to me in the temple, I would have come then. There was no fight from him at all to what they were going to do. He willingly accepted because it was of the will of the Father for him to go.
And he also talked about it being prophecy to be.
Right. Yeah. Fulfilling Scripture. It happened in order to fulfill Scripture, which is why they came that way. Scripture actually prophesies how they will come after him. He's like, I would have come. He would have willingly done that. And that just humbles me, you know, that his heart was so other-focused, Adriana, that he was willing to surrender knowing what was coming, and which is why the garden prayer was so intense, because he knew what was to be. Did anybody else have something that they were learning about Jesus from this passage?
I was just going to say, he follows his, I guess, tradition of asking questions to reveal what's in a person's heart. And so, I don't know, that's how I took his question. I mean, he asks a bunch of questions. He asks Judas, he asks the crowd. And, you know, even the disciples, even if it was a rhetorical question, but it's all to reveal people's hearts.
Right, right. Comes in, comes out. That's good.
Well, he also reminds them that he is God the Father, is his, he is the Son of God the Father. Because he talks about it on, when he talks about the angels. The legions that he could call, you know.
Right.
He's reminding him who he is.
Okay. This I thought was interesting. I read this, actually, it was just this morning when I was going back over the stuff. When he says that, Cornerstone Commentary said that the legions of angels, you have to know that there's 6,000 men to a legion in the Roman military. So this is what they would associate that to. By him saying 12, he was saying, I could send a legion of 6,000 angels for each of you. 12. Because Judas is no longer a part of them, so that would include him. So all of them could have had 6,000 angels guarding and protecting them if he just said, Abba, Father.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, that's 72,000, by the way. I had to do the math. I'm not a mathematician.
Our little algebra girl should have figured that real fast.
Like, I had to do it the long way. I had to write the numbers down and multiply it. But that's amazing. Like, I can do this. I could call that for you. And it, that makes me think of, you know, when Elijah, when they're getting ready to go to battle and Gehazi cannot see what's happening. And so Elijah prays, I think it's like in 1 Kings 7:16, somewhere in there, and he's like, Lord, open his eyes that he may see. And then all of a sudden, God grants Gehazi a window into heaven, and he can see surrounding them the host of angels that are greater around them than the, you know, greater among them than those that are after them. And that's what Jesus is trying to get them to understand. And that's just profound to me.
Yeah.
You know, that he's still a teacher in the midst of knowing that they're coming to attack him. He's still trying to show them what's coming and what he can do, what he chooses not to do. And I'm, like, blessed by that. I made a pretty simple list. I mean, just simple things that, okay, what can I learn from Jesus from this kind of list? You know, we've gone and done some of the deeper ones. And I'm like, I just wrote down, he's patient. You know, I get so irritated when things don't go my way. Does anybody else do that?
Oh, yeah.
Can you feel the heat of emotion, you know, rise up and your spine just kind of, you got to, your hair stands up or whatever. He was so patient with these people. the mob, you know, kind of like, okay, you know, my mom and dad were here visiting, and they have two puppies. They're 6 months old, and they have names. They're Sergeant and Linus. But I call them Thing One and Thing Two.
Uh-oh.
Because Thing One and Thing Two, they run across the room. They jump off of something and literally leap on top of the couch and bounce off your head. I mean, they're everywhere. They're all over the place. But as parents and me as the sibling of these two dogs, whatever, you know, I'm watching these dogs and they're being ill-behaved. Totally ill-behaved. They just don't get it yet. They're being disciplined, but they're ill-behaved. They're all over the place. But yet we look at them with love.
Yeah. That does remind us of us, doesn't it?
And so Jesus is looking at them, and he knows they're being ill-behaved. But he loves them. I'm like, what grace.
Absolutely.
What grace that he did that. He was patient. He was kind. He was focused on God's will, regardless of what man was doing to him, for the Father's will. And I had Janelle's point. I had remained calm while listening to their accusations. He didn't allow what they had to say against him to cause him to get riled up. He remained steadfast. So it didn't matter that they were being dysfunctional. He remained functional. I had to remind somebody in my life about that this week, as we have some family chaos happening, and that it doesn't matter if so-and-so is in dysfunction. We cannot draw into that. We have to remain functional. We have to remain holy. We have to remain in love. We have to remain in peace and patience and kindness and all the things that we see in Jesus. The other thing is, he was steadfast. There was no wavering. He was consistent. He was the same in the dark of the night with a mob that he was in the temple. And that's beautiful. And then I wrote down, silent before the accusers, that he remained silent. Yeah. And the thing that I want us to understand here, it wasn't until Caiaphas said, by the living God, give testimony. Guzik said, Jesus did not speak until he had to, because if he didn't speak the way that Caiaphas spoke to him, it would have been disobedience. And remember, he never sinned. And so he didn't. He remained silent until he had to speak.
She knows.
And he did not proclaim himself as Messiah. He let Caiaphas do it. He affirmed it. And then he stopped the violence and he healed the enemy. Come back next week so we can talk about this further. God bless.